Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us for the first half of the show today is Daisy Fair from Copper Moose Farm. Daisy, welcome.
Morning, guys.
Well, this feels like an annual, like, rite of spring when you come in to tell us about the upcoming season.
I agree.
But I want to start with this question today. So for our listeners who may not know Copper Moose Farm, if that's possible, how would you describe the farm?
Well, let's see. I would describe it as, you know, we're right in the heart of the basin. We're Park City's local farm right there.
How long have you been there?
14 years.
Whoa.
Whoa. I know.
Wow.
Madness.
Was
this is our 14th season.
I'm sure, you know, you thought, well, we're going to be here for like 35 years when you first started.
Yeah.
Probably not. You're probably like, let's just get through these first year, one year at
no,
a time.
No, I was 20 when I started the farm with John and Christy coming. And man, I knew this was going to be hundreds and hundreds of years.
Oh,
and
really?
I was
legacy.
Laying down a legacy.
Handed down.
In perpetuity.
Soil was going to be better shape, you right. know, when I left the farm hundreds of years later than when, okay. you know, I stepped on the farm.
So,
but now the reality is, wow, I'm just going to get through today.
Oh, it's okay. So it is.
Well,
sometimes.
You know how it goes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, those years in your 20s when, boy, everything's possible.
So
but
idealistic.
I will say yes. idealistically that we still will. I mean, the way that we farm is still on the premise then that that land will be able to produce nutrient-dense food forever and ever and ever, because we don't farm for this year's profits and, you know, this year's crop. We're farming for this year and next year and 25 years from now. So those baseline practices have not changed, nor right. has that goal of ours.
So when people ask, like, oh, are you, you know, organic? Are you biodynamic? There are all these different labels that float around for growing practices. And I know that you are trying to do the best thing.
Yes.
You know, when you were, I don't know, maybe when the farm was a little bit younger, you did do like a formal organic certification.
Yep.
You made the decision to
yep.
move away from that.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about that and like how you describe your growing practices.
So we do still use the best organic and biodynamic growing practices. But I did very conscientiously drop our organic certification, I don't, you know, 8 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They all run together. And that was because very early on, I realized that the organic certification was a box that we didn't belong in. Because we are such a diversified small-scale farm, and we go above and beyond, and we breathe it, and we bleed it, and we believe it so much that we don't belong in a box with farms that are growing 3,000 acres of one thing that is certified organic.
And that is.
And that's, you know, that's great. It is saying something. It is certified organic, and that's nice. But we do so much crop rotation, and we grow so many cover crops and practice biodynamics and all these things that I just felt like I was better served by actually talking to people about how we grow. The other thing is that a lot of small-scale growers like Copper Moose Farm are moving away from the organic certification for many reasons, and a lot of that is just because they are direct consumer farms, so they can talk to all of their you know, folks who are buying their produce. But we automatically get put in the, if you're not organic, you're conventional, you
right.
know, quote unquote conventional.
Quote, yeah.
And that's very much not the case. And so I just feel like we're, you know, we are surrounded by good people in this small scale farm group that's no longer certified organic, but is doing everything really, really well, really, really conscientiously. So I this is not a dig on the organic certification from my perspective. When I go to the grocery store and I can choose organic or conventional, I choose organic because I know something about the way they grow their food. Maybe not a ton, but something.
Right.
But when you come to Copper Moose Farm or you go to the farmer's market and you talk to Renewy Gardens or any of those people, you can find out actually how they're growing their
yeah.
food. And that's a luxury perhaps that we have that I take advantage of by dropping that certification.
So who is defining the word organic?
Well,
certified
organic.
At
this point, it's the federal government.
FDA?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And the Department of Ag. They.
Okay.
Yeah. That has become a federal, you know, federally regulated program. Which, you know, which is great. There are so many good things about having federally regulated programs, but the box got too big, and
right.
Yeah.
No longer and represented, yeah. kind of, mm-hmm. what you were doing.
So everybody's at the party, or so it's like the party's yeah. got a little too big.
Well, we know that, right?
It used to be cool.
At the party, yeah.
Right. So now, but you're practicing beyond organic,
well,
I guess.
And there, I don't really like that term either.
Right.
You know, it's funny.
Or
it's
organic a, plus. A, I don't know.
Yeah. It. I mean, we practice more the original organic. You know, in the 60s and 70s, when all those original guys, Elliot Coleman, they came up with what they wanted the organic certification to represent, that's what we're still doing.
And what did they want? What?
Well, it just includes crop diversity
okay.
and giving, you know, rest to the land and being really concerned about your wildlife and your beneficial insects and, you know, the whole ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
not just not spraying a petroleum-based chemical on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a lot of ways it's been diluted down to that in some
okay.
areas.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
since you mentioned wildlife,
yeah,
we've been enjoying doing some wildlife watching at the farm mm. this spring.
Yes, completely obsessed.
Tell us about the aviary that you're
I
running
know,
over
right?
there.
That's
yeah,
I spend my day farming and looking up into the sky and watching our rookery of blue herons. We've got 4 nests now. 2 years ago, the first nest came, and now we're up to 4.
It's incredible.
And then I'm sure that people who follow my Instagram feed know all about the great horned owls that took over the red-tailed hawk nest. Oh, the drama this spring. It was intense. So, yeah, we've got at least 3 of those herons are sitting on eggs, 3 of those nests. I imagine that the great horned owlets have already been hatched because they've been sitting on those eggs for at least a month and a half. And I will say I am not sure if the red-tailed hawks have laid eggs in their new nest, because they had to build a new nest, because the owls won.
The owls Ugh. Won.
The
owls
won.
Forced the hawk
yep.
from its home.
From its home. The hawks have been nesting in that one nest since before I ever came on the property. So that's pretty...
Yeah.
Right.
I've got some history there.
Pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is interesting.
But one of the great things about having all those birds around, of course, is that they help us out with some of our pest problems,
okay.
which are voles are one of our biggest pests. I'm sure mm-hmm. everybody in Park City and the greater Snyderville Basin and county as a whole has noticed that last winter there was a decent amount of vole damage
yes.
as the snow melted.
This has been a vole peak year,
yes,
for
it's
sure.
Vole peak year,
yes.
Which I found is interesting. It should have happened last year, but because of the low snow, it didn't. And so
yeah.
now here we are.
And now here we are with yeah. all that snow this winter. They just.
Okay.
Oh, they went to town.
They went to town.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you're managing. You know what? You let nature manage your vole problem.
Well, I would love to let nature totally take care of it, but I have to do a little work on it, too.
And what is your contribution
well,
involved?
We do some trapping just with snap
oh,
traps.
Oh, trapping.
Yep.
You're not spraying chemicals.
Oh, no.
Which is my takeaway. Stop spraying chemicals.
Oh, yes.
Applying chemicals to your lawn
yeah.
to control voles. Do your best, well, either via trapping
mm-hmm.
or and let nature... in the form of those raptors and those owls.
And snakes?
Well,
oh,
man,
yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right.
I caught a snake on camera last year swallowing a vole. It was pretty incredible.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, persistent toxic chemicals, they're not doing any of us any good.
Right. Whether it's on our food, most likely,
soils,
or on our grasses and our soil.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the where does the great blue herons nest?
They're on the tippy top.
That's an amazing
of the cottonwood
thing.
Trees. It's the most ridiculous looking thing sometimes. These huge birds coming in. And their nests are tiny.
Oh, are
too.
They small?
You look up there in some of these windstorms, you know, I'm like,
that
oh
we've
my
had,
gosh.
Yeah.
But they know what they're doing.
They got it figured out.
We haven't had a nest hit the
right.
ground, so
but
yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen.
Incredible, because they're so ungainly up there, you know.
Right.
And that's where they nest.
You
just
wanna,
feels comfortable up there, right
yeah,
on top.
You wanna, yeah, you want to suggest maybe a couple of flights
I
down?
Know, yeah.
But are they year round or do they go?
No.
Do they go south?
Great blue herons.
Yeah.
They migrate.
They migrate. Okay,
well,
so they're back.
They're certainly not in the nests all year round.
Yeah.
I think they hung
yeah.
around in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But okay, so those are the birds you've got
yeah.
amongst all others and general wildlife. But again, as Nell said, that's part of your team.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Okay. It's a team effort.
And entertainment.
Something to look
farm
at while you're weeding
life.
And planting.
Yeah, no, I mean,
and...
the way that we farm on a whole is for the whole environment for as long as we can, you know?
Right.
I
yeah.
mean, we're all in this together from my angle. And that's one of the things that I love about being at Copper Moose Farm and in this community is that it really does feel like we're all in it together. I love our community that comes by the farm stand. And I mean, it's been a long time. It's been 14 years. I've seen kids grow up and go to college, and folks have watched my child grow up, mm-hmm. and we all know each other's dogs, and it's great, right? So that's one of my favorite things. And I think that stuff like this or social media now, the community folks will come in and be like, so what's going on with the owl? Or, those things that really make me feel like Copper Moose is part of the community. It's really great.
It is. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right. So what are you growing?
Well, so right now, obviously, as everybody knows, we had a pretty late spring. So we kind of started our season 3 weeks behind, which is always makes for a stressful spring.
Wow.
But that's the way it goes sometimes. It hasn't gone this way in a long time.
Right.
That's why it feels kind of funny. But so right now we've got, lettuces germinating and our arugula, and the beets are up and the turnips are up. Radishes are up outside. Dill and cilantro are up. Spinach is up.
Okay.
Carrots are not up yet. I just looked right before I came.
All right.
But we've got the main greenhouse is all transplanted out with tomatoes and cucumbers and basil. And today, Natalie and I will be transplanting two of our hoop houses into tomatoes and cucumber and some flowers. And, we're just off and running. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this spring, really, how far behind we end up being, because sometimes maybe it doesn't make that big of a difference. Lots of times I feel like we start sowing really too early, but it's in our nature. We see soil, we got to get out there, we got to start planting stuff.
Right.
But if it's too cold out, the crops aren't going to grow very fast. So who knows? We may end up totally on track by the time we hit June. We'll see.
So when does the farm stand open?
Yeah,
and
so
how
first,
can people, get some veggies?
Yeah, so first week of June, we sure hope to be open. That's for sure. But we will be open at the farm this Saturday for our annual open house, which is always super fun. Once a year, we open up the whole place and invite the community in to come check out our gardens and our growing practices. Our beekeeper will be there, Doug Fryer, to talk about our beehives. We will have almost every single one of our community food partners there this Saturday, which is super fun because these folks who we love to be involved with, we are total nerds about farming and they are total nerds about whatever they do, whether it's Auntie M's baked goods or Mama Chari kombucha or Chris Tart with Wasatch Creamery. We're introducing Corinne from Park City Creamery, her soft cheeses this year. It's very exciting. So that's fun. Plan on grabbing lunch. Joe Saladega with Savory Kitchens will be there with some great lunch stuff. So it's just a fun time to come grab lunch, walk around the gardens, talk to the growers, talk to our beekeeper, buy some seedlings while you're at it. Some of our seedlings that we sell to the community are ready to go. Not all of them, again, because of the late spring that we're having, but some of the very early season crops, the crops that we've already transplanted out, are going to be ready for folks to take home. So kales and chards and onions and scallions and pak choy, stuff like that, will be ready for folks to put in their own garden, because I know we're all itching to get growing.
Yeah.
Itching to get growing. I like that. Anything new in crops this year or anything that you've phased out or changes?
Yeah, we're always doing slight tweaks. So let's see. I feel like last year we phased a couple things out that we... Yeah, so I feel like this year it's pretty standard. A couple new varieties here and there, because we always grow a number of varieties for each crop that we grow. So I think we've got some new varieties. We're trying some new early season tomatoes. That'll be fun. Some different flowers. That'll be fun. But small tweaks at this point. Yeah.
And are there specific times at the open house where people can get a tour or anytime?
So I set up a self-guided tour so that folks can walk around, check it out. We'll have our farmers placed throughout the farm.
Like at stations,
answer questions. Okay. And it's just 12 to 3, so it's a come whenever you want. Ride your bike, walk, drive, whatever you need to do. We do just ask that folks don't bring their dogs to the farm itself.
Right.
Grab some lunch, bring the kids. We'll be super fun and a very relaxed afternoon wandering around the farm.
12 to 3.
12 to 3.
That doesn't seem like near enough time for me to really take in.
But we want everyone really there.
It's 2 hours just to watch the
birds.
The GHO and the GBH. Yeah.
That's it. I'm probably not going to see anyone actually in the greenhouses or anything, which is where I usually hang out because everyone's going to be out with the great horned owl. But that's cool. Come see the birds.
Yeah. Bring your binoculars.
Bring your binoculars.
You know.
I was just thinking that as I was driving out to come here right. this morning. I've got to just keep my binoculars in the car.
Yeah.
Yep.
But speaking with Daisy Fair, she's with Copper Moose Farms. We're talking about, among other things, what's the farm operations recently turning on for this year and the open house this Saturday. I wanted to get back to the big snow season that we had. And we've been talking about the potential for flooding and a lot of runoff. There's still a lot of snow up in the mountains, surprisingly. And it seems like it's being drawn off in a kind of a controlled fashion. And so far,
mm-hmm.
Is your area in kind of a flood-prone area? Keep an eye on what's going on?
Yeah, when we were building the fields, we did avoid some of the, you know, really, really old stream beds that haven't run in the history that anyone can remember.
Right.
We avoided them.
Oh, you did?
So,
okay.
Yeah, so our farm itself should be fine. Was it 20... What was the last big runoff that we had? I can't remember
10,
what year
11,
that was.
12.
But we are, you know, we have at least three streams right there.
Yeah.
And we had to do some sandbagging, but there was no big drama.
Okay.
So, you know, like you said, it seems to be coming off in a controlled fashion at this point. So,
right.
Yeah.
So far, so good, but there's still quite a bit left.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how is the creek, East Canyon Creek, running these days now? I mean...
It's been high, but not like out of the banks, you know, into the upper floodplain.
Right.
So it has been, you know, like I've heard people calling it like an orderly flow, you know.
You still get calls? I remember you telling stories about people would call that their backyard was flooding and what will you do about it?
You know, I have not gotten any of those calls this year.
Yet.
But, you know, you would get the calls from people who whose homes are, you know, in low-lying areas. Like, there was too much water coming down here, you know, coming down the stream.
What
in
is
a really,
Swanner going to do
it's
about
it? It's a teachable
it.
Moment, right? Yeah.
Okay. That's we'll have to remind
think
people
about it
that
in a positive way.
You're not preventing water from going passing through Swanner. That's the nature of that low-lying
yeah.
area.
And wetlands actually have this ability in the spring to soak up
yeah.
enormous amounts of water. So they actually slow that flow and then release it later in the summer
that's
when it's drier. So, you know, so I always just try to explain that. And
okay. And you may have to explain it again
that's right.
at
that's
some
right.
point.
Yeah.
So you're ready for that. You're
yeah.
a team of operators on call too.
That's right. Awaiting your call.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But so Daisy, so that's what's going on. Spend another couple minutes or so circling back to the biodynamic nature of what you do, because in addition to you talked about voles and pests, you have insects too. But you're not going to spray for those things, flea beetles, and so you put covers on and do other things, natural.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways to get along with the pests in your area,
yeah.
and one of those elements is accepting a little bit of losses.
Okay.
Like there's. As I like to jokingly say, even though it's kind of true, farming has taught me how to share. Because you just can't, you know, it's part of the natural system. So, yes, we have flea beetles is probably our biggest insect pest. And they like the really spicy greens. So if you've been planting your garden at home and you see your radishes germinate and then all these little tiny holes appear in the leaves and your radishes don't grow, that's the flea beetles. So they like spicy greens, arugula, radishes. They like the brassicas, too, when they're young, like broccoli, and they also like kales when they're young. So I cover all those crops either for the younger part of their life or their whole life with a lightweight floating row cover. So the product we use is Agribon. And that just hides the crop from the flea beetles. And is it 100% perfect?
No.
Absolutely not. But it's enough that I can get great crops out to the Park City community, and we haven't sprayed anything to control the flea beetles. Now, just using the term spraying, that one's always one of my little soapboxes, because there's lots of great stuff that you can spray, right?
Okay.
So, you know, like actually when I left Natalie at the farm this morning, she was spraying some fish and kelp onto The little baby lettuce is growing right now. Yeah, those are some of our fertilizers.
Okay,
that we
fertilizers.
Use. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Fish
and kelp.
In some type of liquid form.
Yeah, she wasn't just smearing fish paste on the baby lettuces.
Broadcasting, you know.
Every dog in the neighborhood is now at the
right.
farm.
Yeah. But fish
spring.
And kelp.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and they've both been processed to bring out all the great nutrients that we're looking for, the micro and macronutrients.
Right.
But there are other things that can be applied to deter pests. Like right now I'm using, actually we haven't put it out yet, but we will be today, a great product called Vole Scram, which is an organic approved product. And it's peanut husks from the peanut industry that mm-hmm. are mixed with garlic oil and castor bean oil. And voles hate that smell. And so we spread that. It's a granular. We spread that around.
Yeah.
And it works really well in greenhouses. It's a little bit trickier on, say, your lawn or your outside garden beds. It would work. But every time it rains or your sprinklers turn on, they're less effective.
Right.
And then back to spraying, we spray all kinds of biodynamic preps in the field. Mm. So that's one of my things. I always like to educate people. You know, if you go to the farmer's market and you ask someone, do you spray? And most people by that, they think they're implying chemicals. That it's too general of a question, you know, because hopefully everyone is out there spraying something, whether they're spraying fertilizers that are good for the environment and for the plants, or whether they're spraying biodynamic preps or whatever. Spraying is not necessarily a bad thing.
So what's the right question then that you should
ask?
Are
you using persistent toxic chemicals on your farm?
Okay.
I think that'll stop some people short sometimes.
Or synthetic chemicals or something along those lines,
mm-hmm.
rather than just say, do you spray? Because if somebody would ask you that, you would say, well,
I do.
But I spray these organic.
And again, as Nell was talking about teachable moments, I love it when someone asks me at the farm stand if we spray. I'm like, well, yes, we do. How much time do you have? Just the other day, I was spraying Biodynamic Prep 500, and soon we'll be spraying 501.
And what do those things do? Are they enriching the soils, or are they enriching the plants?
Yes,
to all that.
Yeah, I would say that Biodynamic Preps, the easiest way to talk about them is that they are like homeopathic applications for the soils or for the farm in general. So those are applied at certain times of the year.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And so it's interesting, though, that if you apply that Vole Scram, you said peanut shell husks,
garlic oil, castor bean oil. Yeah.
The voles may not like it, but there may be unintended consequence. Maybe some other animals do like it.
Yeah, we haven't. I'm
just thinking that sometimes you're trying to address one issue and maybe you
create
another
issue. Yeah, totally true. I have not noticed that with the Vole Scram. We've been using it for probably 4 years now. And I haven't noticed any unintended
consequences. You still have voles.
It does not get rid of them, especially when you're talking about, we are actively growing on 3 acres, but our farm spread is probably on about 6 acres. So, and tons of field and just open terrain. So, we will always have voles.
And big deer fence or something.
We do. Probably the one, quote unquote, pest that we are able to pretty much eliminate.
Okay.
Fencing is deer, the elk, and the moose. Now, as probably a few people in Park City know, there have been a couple break-ins. We did have a massive elk in the fields a couple summers ago. Pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive.
That was not a break-in. That was a farmer flaw. We left the gate open.
Oh.
So it was pretty easy to go back and figure out how that one happened.
Only took like one day of leaving the end.
This elk had just been waiting.
Oh, boy. That was a really...
Checking the gate every night.
That was a great afternoon.
How do you get an elk out of your farm?
Very delicately, because he was really big. We went running out there and Todd and I were looking at each other like, I don't know what we're going to do. And I think we just willed him out with our mind. The legend is, though, that Todd swung himself up onto his back and rode him
So you keep those out. Of course, you have rabbits or other things.
We don't. And I don't even want to. We can't even talk about that. I don't know why I don't have them. We just don't even talk about it.
Right.
They're all around us.
All
right.
We don't want to.
No.
So I will say we do have
hush tones.
We have hush tones, knock on everything. We do have two pretty aggressively vicious hunting dogs. Two small dogs who go after the voles, and I'm sure would be happy to take on a rabbit. And
really?
So maybe that's why we also have cats on the property, you know, so.
I can say it's a team effort. The team photo includes as many animals as it does humans.
And I mean, think about it with the way the open fields are, and we've got the trees around it, and all of those raptor birds sitting up there. You know, that may very well be why we don't have any of the
The bee, just presence. The bee word. That's a good point. Presence does
presence,
a lot.
Yeah, and the owls, man, they are scary.
Yeah.
Right? They'll eat a cat, won't they?
Oh, yeah.
They'll probably eat a little tiny frizzle bean.
Okay. So let's wrap the open house.
Open house is this coming weekend on Saturday from 12 to 3. Swing on by. Grab some lunch. Really, again, I just want to reiterate some of our great community food partners. Dale Batty from Old Home Place will be there, and he's doing pasture-raised meats and poultry and llama and all kinds of stuff.
Llama.
Okay. So he'll be there with all of his meats and eggs, and he is just a fabulous old school grower that I really encourage people to come talk to. Of course, all of our growers will be there. The gardens will be wide open. The greenhouses, we just replaced the polycarbonate on our big greenhouse. So she's looking pretty shiny right now.
Oh, good.
And then hopefully the farm stand will be opening up the 1st of June. And I encourage people to get on our website. We do have some fun new events this year. We're doing a couple smaller dinners at the farm stand, which is just such a lovely place to settle down for dinner. So I encourage people to check all that out. We will be doing our big harvest dinner again this year.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yep, good times always. That's in August. When is it? August 10th, I think. And we're expecting it to be a great summer.
And where's the best place for people to find information? Website, Facebook, social media?
Yes, website, Facebook, and Instagram probably are the best places.
And do you take volunteers?
We do take volunteers, We like people to commit for the entire season, though, because we like to get people trained up on a specific job or three or seven. And then they're part of our crew. We need them to show up every week. So feel free to reach out to me via email if you think you might be interested in volunteering. We pay really well in food. And my email address is daisy@coppermoosefarm.com. But you can also reach me through the contact us form on our website, which is coppermoosefarm.com.
All right.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Daisy, thank you so much for joining us for the annual spring recap.
Great to see you guys. I always look forward to it.
And we'll see you Saturday.
Good. Right. Will we?
And if Doug Fryer is going to be there with his bees, I'll be there for a while because I just get transfixed
to
watch the bees.
Yeah, and I think Doug, I don't want to make any promises here for Doug, but he might very well be putting the bees in on Saturday.
It's supposed to be.
Because I know they're coming on the 10th, which is the day before.
Well, right now, it's supposed to be
beautiful,
sunny and in the 60s. So
I know.
It's going to
be the perfect
day. This weekend is going to be great.
And I do know Auntie M too. You know, she'll be selling Mother's Day pies there. So if you're thinking about your mama.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, swing on by and grab a Mother's Day pie.
Oh, perfect.
come
you
to
just
the
double
farm
task
and buy some pie.
No. Perfect.
Daisy Fair with Copper Moose Farms. Thank you so much.
Thanks, you guys. Have a great day.
All right. Let's take a break.